the truth? The whole truth? Nothing but the truth? The hidden truth. The vital human drama of the famous lie detector. Bringing you authentic case histories from the files of the late Leonard Keeler, one of the world's foremost scientific criminologists. Mr. Keeler's real-life part is played by Hart McGuire, who reveals from week to week some of the most baffling human dramas of our time. The hidden truth.
Tonight's real life drama is the psychological and scientific study of a juvenile mind, the mind of 16-year-old Jimmy Waldo. Through recorded reactions of blood pressure, pulse rate, rate of respiration, and skin resistance, the polygraph, or so-called lie detector, looked into Jimmy Waldo's mind. What it saw in that mind is a lesson in child psychology that none of us who worked in that case will ever forget.
No, no, I didn't set them fires. I didn't set none of them, I tell you.
Jimmy Waldo lived with his hard-working parents in a community of steel workers in an Indiana city. Since his father worked at the blast furnaces all day and his mother was employed at a local bakery, young Jimmy Waldo spent a great deal of his time without parental supervision. From 9 to 3 each day, he attended school, but the rest of the time weighed heavily on his hands. We first find Jimmy standing among the crowd at a scene of a burning house. A house just 3 blocks away from his own.
Here they come. Here come the engines, but they'll never put it out. The flames are too high.
Hey, hurry up. Hurry up and let him in. There's another truck on the third floor.
Look, she's got a jump.
Don't jump, lady. Wait for the ladder. Don't jump.
The clothes are burning. She's got a jump.
Wait, lady. Wait.
Jump, lady. Don't jump.
Mrs. Margaret Tomasello died in that fire. Her clothes ablaze, she jumped 3 stories to the concrete sidewalk, her flaming corpse making its own funeral pyre. Daniel Tomasello, the victim's husband, screamed murder to the local fire authorities.
Look, there was nothing wrong with that furnace. I checked it the last thing before I left the house. Somebody started that fire, I tell you. The basement window was broken, wasn't it? Somebody threw in some burning rags or something. Somebody murdered my wife.
Well, with the exception of that broken window, all evidence has been destroyed, Mr. Tomasello. It seemed to be a flash fire. No chance to save anything.
Look, I know somebody broke that window and started the fire. Somebody murdered my wife.
Uh-oh. There goes another alarm. We'll have to take this up later, Mr. Tomasello.
I'll make him pay. Whoever murdered my wife, I'll make him pay.
Hey, this alarm, it came in from District 2. Right in your neighborhood, Mr. Tomasello. This thing is getting to be a habit.
It's a firebug. There's a firebug loose around here, and you got to find him before he kills everybody.
Once again, young Jimmy Waldo was among the crowd at the scene of the fire, his eyes ablaze with excitement.
It's too far gone. They're never going to save it. It's too late for the fire engines now.
The second house, too, was a total loss. It seemed to be a flash fire that consumed the small frame building before the fire engines reached the scene. But those 2 fires were only the beginning. During the next 3 days, Jimmy Waldo's neighborhood was a nightmare of shrieking sirens and roaring engines as fire after fire was reported.
There go the fire engines again. That's the 7th fire in 3 days.
Fire Chief Mark Daly had to admit that 7 fires in 1 neighborhood all within 3 days represented more than mere coincidence. Then, too, although most of the homes had been completely destroyed, 1 or 2 of them had been left partially standing. and the fire inspectors had found two small fragments of rags. Fire Chief Mark Daly delivered these two small bits of evidence to Bennett Walsh, Chief Inspector of the Arson Detail.
Can you smell it, Walsh? Those pieces of rag reek with smoke, of course. There's something else there, too.
Yeah. Kerosene. It's kerosene odor, all right. But whoever soaked these rags didn't do a good job. The oil didn't penetrate all of the cloth, or these pieces would have burned, too.
Well, at least we haven't had an alarm for about 6 hours. I guess those newspaper headlines have scared off the arsonists. Temporarily, anyway.
Say, Daly, look.
Hmm?
What do you suppose this white stuff is on this cloth here?
I noticed that, too. Might be wood ash.
Might be. It feels sort of silky. It's more like flour.
Flour?
Yeah. Why, does that mean anything to you, Mark?
Ben, do you remember that first fire? The one that killed Dan Tomasello's wife?
Yeah. He made a lot of noise about murder, didn't he?
He's done more than that, Ben. He's practically been putting the finger on Jimmy Waldo.
Yeah? Who's Jimmy Waldo?
A kid in the neighborhood, about 16, I think.
What reasons did Tomasello give you for suspecting the kid?
Well, Dan claims he saw Jimmy Waldo at every fire. Says the kid was excited and directed the fireman.
That doesn't make much sense to me. What kid isn't excited at a fire?
That's what I told Dan. But now I'm not so sure. That flower on the rags we picked up.
Yeah? Well, what about it? What have you got, Mark?
Jimmy Waldo's mother works in a bakery. If it just happens she brings home empty flour sacks...
Hey, maybe Dan Tomasello has something. I think I better pay a visit to Jimmy Waldo's home.
Oh, there it goes again. I thought this was too good to last.
Mark, get on that phone and find out where that fire is. If the Waldo kid's there, I'll pick him up.
Hello? Hello, this is Chief Daly. Get me fire headquarters.
1:30. Kid ought to be in school at this time of the day. If he's at that fire, he's going to have some explaining to do.
Hello? Chief Daly speaking. Where's that fire?
What? If that house burns to the ground, I'll get myself a whole new fire department. Everyone will get the axe. Hear me? The axe.
Where is it? Same neighborhood as the other fires?
Yeah. It's the same neighborhood, all right. It's Jimmy Waldo's house.
Young Jimmy Waldo was a very frightened boy as he was taken into the office of Bennett Walsh, Chief Inspector of the Arson Detail. Young Jimmy was frightened, but extremely defiant.
What do you want with me? I don't know nothing about them fires. Everybody's saying I started them, but I don't know nothing about them.
Sit down, Jimmy.
Do you think I'd set fire to my own house? Do you think I'd do that?
I'm not sure, Jimmy. Did you start the fire in your attic?
No, I did not. What would I want to do that for?
Oh, possibly because your mother stored a lot of empty flour sacks in the attic, Jimmy.
Sure she did. She was always bringing them home to make kitchen curtains and things.
Jimmy, after you read about the fires being started with flour sacks dipped in kerosene, maybe you didn't want anyone to find those flour sacks in your attic.
Sure. Sure I read about it. But that don't mean nothing to me. Other people have flour sacks, don't they?
Yes, I suppose so, but I think it might be more than coincidence that we found an empty kerosene can in your basement, don't you?
I never touched that kerosene can. Pop uses it to fill the lamps when the electricity is off during thunderstorms. The electricity's always going off during thunderstorms.
Yes, I know, Jimmy, I know. I learned from your father that he filled that kerosene can about 3 days ago. Before the first fire.
I don't know nothing about what went on in the basement. I hardly ever go down
there.
Tell
me, Jimmy, at 1:30 yesterday afternoon when that fire was discovered in your attic, where were you?
I was in school. I'm always in school at 1:30.
No, that won't do any good, son. You might have known we'd checked the school. You were hanging out at Marty's pool room and you know it.
Well, what if I was? You're trying to frame me for them fires.
You lied to me about school, didn't you?
I hate school. Them teachers are always picking on me. I wouldn't go at all if the truant officer wasn't always sticking his nose into my business.
Your folks haven't the time to handle you, son. Someone has to look after your welfare.
Leave my old man and old lady out of this. Hey, if my old man knew so much about that kerosene can, how come you ain't got him in here?
You young rat. You trying to blame your own father for crimes that you committed? For your information, your father was at work at the time every one of those fires started. And so was your mother. They're working to give you an education and see that you get a start in life. And you show your gratitude by hanging out at pool rooms and trying to burn up the neighborhood.
I didn't burn nothing. You're just like the teachers. Everybody there was picking
look,
on
Jimmy,
me.
Look, Jimmy, look. Look at this cigarette lighter.
Hey! Put that out. Put that lighter out.
You can't look at it, can you, Jimmy? You don't dare look at that flame.
I seen enough flame. I seen people jumping out of windows and getting killed. I don't want to see no more flames. I don't want to ever see no more flames.
All right. It's out. But this cigarette light is a test, Jimmy. A psychological test. And you reacted just the way I thought you would.
Huh? What do you mean, psycho? I don't understand none of that stuff.
I do, Jimmy. We found out long ago that an arsonist can't look at a flame without giving himself away by the wild gleam in his eye. You're a psychopathic, Jimmy.
No, I ain't. I ain't.
You're a firebug, Jimmy. And we have jails in this state where we lock up kids like you for a long, long time. You might even get a death sentence. The Hidden Truth continues in just a moment. An empty kerosene can in the basement, flour sacks in the attic, and oil stains and flour streaks on the basement floor. This was the overwhelming evidence that influenced the jury in 16-year-old Jimmy Waldo's conviction as a diabolical firebug. An arsonist who started seven fires in his own neighborhood, one of which resulted in the death of Margaret Tomasello. In spite of Jimmy's youth, the prosecuting attorney fought for a life sentence. But he was opposed by Winifred Standish, a child psychologist and a member of the mayor's board recently appointed to study juvenile delinquency.
Your Honor, before you pass sentence, I have something to say. There is no question in anyone's mind but what James Waldo's crimes must be punished. But I ask you to look at the background that led to these crimes. There was practically no parental supervision. There are no parks or recreation grounds in that poor neighborhood. But there are pool rooms and evil companions. The Juvenile Delinquency Board has looked into this case, and we feel that nothing is to be gained by life imprisonment. We feel that under proper supervision, James Waldo's life might be salvaged. And we ask that he be committed to a home for juvenile delinquents, where the members of the board can keep him under constant observation.
James Waldo, if this were left entirely to my own discretion, I must admit that I'd put you behind bars for the rest of your natural life. But I must take into consideration the mayor's juvenile delinquency board. And against my better judgment, I commit you to the state reform school under the supervision of Mrs. Winifred Standish and the members of her board.
For the first 6 months at reform school, Jimmy Waldo was sullen and morose. Winifred Standish spent many long hours trying to break down his reserve and get closer to the boy's inner emotions.
Don't you understand, Jimmy? This isn't really a reform school. That name's old-fashioned. It's really, well, a hospital.
And what have they got me here for? I ain't sick.
Your mind must have been sick, Jimmy, or you wouldn't have done the things you did.
I ain't done nothing. I didn't set them fires, and nobody can make me say I did.
Look, Jimmy, let's forget all about that. Let's start thinking about something entirely different. Baseball or football, for instance.
Do you think I'd play on the same team with the kids in here? They're a bunch of crooks. I don't want nothing to do with them.
Oh, Jimmy Waldo, I'm afraid you're your own worst enemy. The boys at the school you used to attend weren't a bunch of crooks, but you didn't get along with them either.
I'd get along with them if I had another chance. I didn't know when I was well off. If I'd have stuck with them kids at school instead of hanging around with them pool players, I wouldn't have been blamed for everything that happened. I knew them guys were no good, but I didn't have sense enough to stay away from them.
You mean you'd like another chance to go back to parochial school?
Sure. Sure I would. I'd show them. I'd show everybody they was wrong about me.
Well, Jimmy, it'll be a difficult job to convince the mayor that you're worth a chance. Perhaps if you behave here for another 6 months and try to be cooperative and make friends...
I'll do it. I'll get along swell, Mrs. Standish. I'll do anything you say if I just get a chance to make good back in my old neighborhood.
This was the spark that Winifred Standish had been waiting for. It was a spark of hope for Jimmy Waldo's future. He became a model student. He cooperated with his teachers and became popular with his classmates. After months of model behavior, Winifred Standish was able to convince the mayor and the parole board that Jimmy Waldo was deserving of a chance to make good at his old school, under strict probation, of course.
Hey, Jerry, I was wondering if...
Just a minute, Mike.
Well, you know, I used to play left field once. I wonder if I can try out for the team again.
Huh? What do you think us for? You think we want to play baseball with a firebug?
Hello, Mike. How are you, Mike? Oh. Oh, hi, Bill. Ain't any of you guys talking? What are you trying to give me? What are you trying to do to me? Okay, I'm a firebug. I'll show him I'm a firebug. I'll show him.
Hey, look! Look at that blaze! It's a school! It's a parochial school!
Hey, that's a terrific fire! You'll never be able to save that building!
All right, Jimmy. This time we've got you dead to rights.
You don't have to shove me around. I showed him, didn't I? I showed
him. Shut up and sit down!
Quit shoving me!
Look at him, Mrs. Standish. Take a good look at him. There's the kid you and your mayor's board have been spending the taxpayers' money on.
Jimmy, answer me truthfully. Did you start that fire? Did you try to burn up the school?
Sure. Sure I did it, and I'm glad I did it. They had it coming to them, didn't they? I'll show them nobody can kick me around and call me a firebug.
Oh, I'm beginning to understand. Mr. Walsh, I wonder...
Whatever it is, no, Mrs. Standish. This time no board of crackpots is going to keep him out of the pen where he belongs.
Go ahead. Send me to the pen. What do I care?
Mr. Walsh, doesn't it occur to you as rather strange that Jimmy would so readily admit starting his school fire and still deny having started the ones you convicted him of?
What's strange about it? I didn't set them other fires. I didn't.
Shut up, you. I don't see what those other fires have got to do with this, Mrs. Standish. He was convicted and that's that.
Oh, no, it isn't. If it can be proved that Jimmy Waldo had nothing to do with those other fires... I think it'd be quite apparent to everybody that this school fire is the court's responsibility.
What?
If Jimmy was sent to reform school for something he didn't do, the court is responsible for the brand his schoolmates have placed upon him, the brand of firebug. My committee feels that we should do everything possible to clear up all doubt about those other fires. For that reason, we'd like to have Jimmy take a deception test at the Kilo Laboratories before he's brought to trial for this school fire.
You mean lie detector? Well, it's all right with me, but I'm convinced the kid isn't worth it. I can't for the life of me understand why you women waste so much time on these hopeless incorrigibles.
Perhaps it's because you aren't a woman, Mr. Walsh.
The Jimmy Waldo deception test was turned over to two of my top polygraph operators, Jack Harrison and Al Breitzman. Each operator tested the boys separately, and each brought in a clear record. We were all convinced that Jimmy reacted normally on the polygraph, and that he'd been falsely convicted of setting the original fires, and through this false conviction had been jibed and taunted by his classmates into setting the school fire. But Inspector Ben Walsh had little faith in our theories.
The kid's no good. If I can prevent it, that lie detector record won't be admitted in court. If you think the kid's innocent of setting those first fires... Just show me the guy who did set him. If you can get a confession out of somebody else, I'll be ready to admit I'm wrong about the kid. And not before.
Here was a challenge I couldn't afford to ignore. The reputation of the polygraph was at stake, as well as the reputation of the mayor's board for the study of juvenile delinquency. I reviewed the case from the beginning. The whole thing looked hopeless, but I couldn't afford to leave a stone unturned. I talked with everyone I met in Jimmy's neighborhood, and it was there that the first ray of hope manifested itself.
Oh, yeah. It was Van Tomasello's house that was the first to go. Oh, it was a terrible thing, the way his wife jumped out of the window with all the clothes burning.
Tomasello, where's he living now?
Oh, he moved away from here. He's living over on Sand Street. He's married, you know. 6 months ago, he found himself another wife.
Ah. Well, I suppose a man can remarry within a few months after his wife's death, but it's the exception rather than the rule. I was working on a very thin hunch, but I decided to look Tomasello up. There was no one at home when I called at his new house, but I met the mailman coming up the steps. Hello, this is Daniel Tomasello's house, isn't it?
Yeah, sure, sure it is. And you'll never find him home this time of the day. They're at the track practically every afternoon.
The track? You mean horses?
Yeah, sure. Ever since I delivered that insurance check on his first wife, him and the second one spend all their time out there.
Well, thanks. Thank you very much. The hunch grew stronger now. Tomasello's wife had been insured. His marriage so soon after her death, his afternoons at the track. I polled the insurance companies and found the agent who had paid his death claim.
Well, this is a very unusual request, Mr. Keeler, but naturally, if your plan works, it will interest my company very much.
It's worth a try, anyway. Now, I'll take care of the details if you get in touch with Tomasello and have him come to your office.
All right. I'll tell him I want to talk to him about his claim. If he thinks there may be some more money coming to him, he'll be glad to come in. At what time do you want him?
Oh, let's make it about 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Shortly after 11 the next morning, Daniel Tomasello arrived at the insurance agent's office. He was asked to wait for a while, then ushered into a small client's interviewing room.
Dave, what's that smell in here? Something burning. What's this stuff on the table? Hey, what are they trying to do? They know. Let me out of here! Let me out of here!
That smell was a piece of flour sack dipped in kerosene and burning in an ashtray. The stuff on the table Daniel Tomasello referred to was a pile of flour sacks and a can of kerosene.
Look, I can't stand it. I told you I did it. I told you I didn't.
Shut up and stop blubbering. I want the whole story right from the beginning.
Well, it was Rosie, my new wife. She wanted me to do it so we could have the money.
So you set fire to your own house while your wife was asleep. Murdered her so you and this Rosie could collect on her insurance.
Yes, I told you. I told you. Now let me alone.
Keeler, you sure turned something up here. Tell me, Tomasello, what gave you the idea of using the Waldo house to soak your rags, huh?
Well, nobody was ever home there. Jimmy was always hanging around the pool rooms. It was easy to make them think he did it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was easy, all right.
You planted all that evidence in Jimmy's basement and then set a whole series of fires in the neighborhood. Well, you certainly succeeded in taking suspicion away from yourself and throwing it all on Jimmy, didn't you, Dan?
Look, you don't have to ask me nothing more. You know everything now. Let me alone.
I should have smelled a rat when Tomasello was so anxious to turn young Waldo in as a firebug. I guess no one can be perfect, Keeler.
Well, it's a break for Jimmy that Tomasello's crime wasn't a perfect one. Young Waldo might be spending his life in jail.
I owe that kid an apology, Keeler. And I owe you one, too. And while I'm going around apologizing, I'm going to appear before the mayor's board for the study of juvenile delinquency and tell him I'm doing a great job. There are all kinds of ways to fight crime, Keeler. And from now on, I'm going to listen to all of them.
The Hidden Truth stars Hart McGuire as Leonard Keeler, dramatizing actual case histories. Featured with him in tonight's presentation, you heard the following artists: John Parker, John Mellon, Moya O'Sullivan, Wayne Polson, Al Garcia, and Guy Dolwyn. Be with us again for The Hidden Truth, a Columbia Hildesker production.